Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. The short, happy reign of Pope John Paul I has ended with shocking abruptness. Less than 5 weeks after he was elected, a heart attack has ended the pontiff's life at the age of 65. Winston Burdett reports from Rome.
The Pope is dead. The Holy See is vacant. Less than 5 weeks after his election, Pope John Paul I has gone as unexpectedly as he came. His death was quiet. Shortly before dawn at 5:30 this morning, his private secretary went to his apartment to celebrate Mass with him, and not finding him in the chapel, looked for him in his bedroom. The Pope had died in his bed. He had been reading a devotional work, The Imitation of Christ. His light was still on. He had died, the doctors later said, sometime before midnight of a heart seizure. At this hour, the body of this man, who by his simplicity and warmth had made so deep an impression in so short a time, lies in state on a candlelit bier, attended by four Swiss guards in the Clementine Hall of the Apostolic Palace. There it will remain until the funeral, the date for which will be decided tomorrow at the first meeting of the Roman cardinals who are now charged with ordering the events for the election of his successor. Already a throng of Romans and foreign visitors, of pilgrims, priests, and nuns, hushed and incredulous, has taken possession of St. Peter's Square, waiting to file past the Pope's body. Already scores of masses have been said by priests of many nations in the violet robes of mourning at the altars in St. Peter's Basilica. At 6 this evening, a solemn mass of suffrage will be celebrated. Vatican City is quiet. Only the great bells of St. Peter's now and again slowly tolling the knell throughout this day of sorrow and of consternation. Winston Burdett, CBS News, Rome.
Correspondent Jerry Bowen describes now the mood of Rome as it mourns the death of the pontiff.
Even as the pontifical flags flew at half-staff at Vatican City, there was a mood of disbelief among the mourners slowly trickling into St. Peter's Square, disbelief replaced by a numbing sorrow that this most popular of pontiffs, or supreme pastor as he preferred to be called, had died. As pilgrims and tourists huddled around special newspaper editions bearing the bold black headline, a few visitors to St. Peter's Square stood in silent prayer below the papal balcony, some fighting back the tears. He was the most popular, most human of all the popes, said one man. Others echoed the sentiment with different words, one saying, "We have lost a good country priest." Though what he called his ministry lasted but 34 days, his ready smile, quick wit, and candor endeared him to millions. Those same numbers are feeling his loss. Jerry Bowen, CBS News, Rome.
Pope John Paul's 34-day reign was one of the briefest in the history of the Roman Catholic Church. The shortest was that of Stephen II, who died 3 days after his election in the year 752. The longest was that of Pius IX, who reigned 32 years in the 19th century. Throughout the Catholic world, the reaction to the death of Pope John Paul has been one of shock and deep sadness. Don Cladstrup reports the way it was today in France.
Church bells tolled across Paris. French radio played solemn music. Cardinal François Marty, the Archbishop of Paris, said the sudden death of John Paul left him dumbstruck. Cardinal Marty, who led France's delegation to the electoral conclave last month, said that John Paul had represented a great hope for the church and that it was now up to all Christians to keep those hopes alive. Expressions of sorrow came from many others, too, from Cardinal Alexander Renard in Lyon, who said the Pope's death is a heavy trial for the Church. From Archbishop Roger Echegaray of Marseille, who said only that he was profoundly shocked. Don Cladstrup, CBS News, Paris.
Terence Cardinal Cook, the Archbishop of New York, got the news in San Francisco, where he's been attending a Catholic conference. Soon afterward, the Cardinal spoke of his feelings at this sad moment.
In our human way, we think of what might have been, of the faith and joy we might have continued to share together. However, we are consoled and strengthened by the Lord's Prayer, "Thy will be done." Because of the example of Pope John Paul, we realize more than ever that we belong to God. We acknowledge him as truly the Lord of life. Let us pray for the Pope and for the Church and for all God's people whom he loved so much.
Cardinal Cook will celebrate Mass in San Francisco today at St. Mary's Cathedral with San Francisco's Archbishop John Quinn, who is president of the National Conference of Catholic Bishops. After that, the Cardinal will fly back to New York. The Archbishop of Canterbury, Dr. Donald Coggan, says the Pope's death was a great loss to the Church and to the world, and a reminder of the fragility of human life. The leader of the world's 65 million Anglicans added, "Our hearts go out in sympathy to the members of the Roman Catholic Church in the sudden death of Pope John Paul after so short a time in office." The rail strike, now paralyzing passenger and freight service in much of the country, is still in progress this morning, despite the action that President Carter took yesterday to end it. The president told his news conference that he was setting up an emergency board under the Railway Labor Act to solve the dispute. The way the White House saw it, that move automatically constituted an order to the striking railway clerks to go back to work. But that's not the way it turned out. Lem Tucker reports what will happen now.
If the strikers don't begin obeying the presidential order, the government will probably start moving against them in the courts sometime today. So far, the union has not asked its members to obey the order and has not said it won't. Last night, Labor Secretary Ray Marshall said he had some indications that the union leadership might be inclined to obey the order, but wanted to make sure that railroad management would be restrained from changing working conditions until those work rules are negotiated. If the government moves to the courts to enforce its order, the question will be, does the law apply in a case where the strike has already started? The administration thinks it does, but concedes the intention of the law was to prevent strikes while talks continue. The union says the law does not apply. If the government wins its point, either in or out of the courts, then the strike will end for at least 60 days while the emergency board tries to solve the issues which have so far defied solution and resulted in a rail strike which is rapidly crippling the nation. Lem Tucker, CBS News, Washington.
CBS News correspondent Miriam Bier reports from Los Angeles that just after President Carter announced his back-to-work order, the walkout spread to the country's third-largest railroad, the Southern Pacific. A union official told CBS News that the signal to be ready to strike came yesterday afternoon, just as Mr. Carter's news conference began. And by the time the news conference ended, workers at the Los Angeles train yards already were leaving. Skeleton crews are trying to move perishable foodstuffs and essential factory parts. But Southern Pacific says they can't move enough to avert serious economic consequences if the strike lasts another week. In his current drive for a quick peace treaty between Egypt and Israel, President Carter is accentuating the positive. And as we hear from CBS News White House correspondent Robert Pierpoint, is ignoring the negative aspects of his recent accomplishments at Camp David.
For example, in his press conference yesterday, the president carefully played down his difference with Prime Minister Begin over the Israeli settlements on the West Bank. He acknowledged that they do not agree on what they may have agreed on at Camp David, but Mr. Carter diplomatically called this an honest disagreement and implied that it really is not all that important. This may be true, particularly if all three leaders have temporarily given up on their efforts to get a second peace treaty for the West Bank areas. Since King Hussein of Jordan was a key participant in the talks supposed to lead to that second treaty, and since Hussein now seems unwilling to participate, this may be the only course open to President Carter. That renders his West Bank difference with Begin somewhat academic. Meanwhile, all three leaders intend to concentrate on the separate Egyptian-Israeli settlement, which high administration sources now say is moving ahead more rapidly than expected. One official told CBS News President Carter might be flying to the Mideast to witness the signing of such an agreement as early as mid-November. Robert Pierpoint, CBS News at the White House.
The government has encouraging news this morning about the nation's economy. The leading economic indicators overall were up 0.8% in August. 5 of the 10 indicators rose, chief among them stock prices. The other 5 were down. They included the average work week. The largest drop occurred in liquid assets.